Thank you very much, George, for putting this beautiful initiative together and for inviting me to be a part of this wonderful learning experience. And I'm inspired that at 6 o'clock in the morning, we have many members of the community out in California who are learning, who are getting together. And we have Reb Elliot all the way from Eretz Yisrael. Thank you for your email yesterday. If only we would be lucky enough to be with you as well. So I was asked to give a short shiur about something that relates to the Parsha. And in this week's Parsha, Parsha's Re'eh, we have the following mitzvah, which really guides us into the laws of tzedakah. So I'm going to talk a little bit about some issues regarding tzedakah, but let's first mention what the pasuk is where we learn this mitzvah of tzedakah. It's in Perek Tesvav, Pasuk Zayin, if you want to look inside. Not necessary, but the Torah says, Ki yiyeh becha evyon me'achad achecha, be'achad she'arecha, be'artzecha asher Hashem Elokecha nosein lach. If there shall be an evyon, if there will be somebody who is in need, somebody who has a deficiency, Lo sa'ameitz es levavcha. We are told, take note, that this is mentioned as a lo sa'ase. Lo sa'ameitz es levavcha. Do not close your heart. Number two, lo sikvos es yadcha me'achicha ha'evyon. Number one, we are told, lo sa'ase is don't close your heart. Lo sa'ase, number two, is don't close your hand. Ki pasoach tiftach es yadcha lo. V'haveit ta'avitenu de'machsara asher yechzer lo. So we have an obligation, not only a lo sa'aseh, we cannot ignore him, but also a mitzvah sa'aseh, that we have to actively engage in helping him and opening up our hearts and minds and hands, obviously, to be of assistance as best as we can. The Gemara says in Masechet Shabbos, Daf Kuf Lamites, I don't know how many members of this shiur learned the Daf Yomi, but if you did, you've seen this recently, so the Gemara says in Masechet Shabbos that Ein Yerushalayim Nifde Ela Bitzdaka. We're now in the Shiva Dinachemta. We're in the 7 weeks that follow Tisha B'Av, and we talk about Geula every week in the Haftorah. We think a lot about what Eretz Yisrael means to us and how central it is to all of our existence. But we think about what will bring back a Geula, what will bring Yerushalayim to be in the place where it should be. And the Gemara gives a very instructive comment that Yerushalayim Nifde. The way that Yerushalayim will be rebuilt and will be given back once again is through our engagement in the mitzvah of tzedakah. How do we know that? Because the pasuk says, Tzion b'mishpa tipadeh v'shaveha b'tzedakah. That the way that we will get back to Yerushalayim, to Eretz Yisrael, is when we engage in the mitzvah of tzedakah. So much so that the Tana Deve Eliyahu writes, Gedola tzedakah. Giving charity, being a charitable human being, is greater miyom shenivra ha'olam ad achshav. I don't know exactly how you understand that, but the Tana Deve Eliyahu writes that this in some way is considered to be greater than everything that has happened until this point from the time that the world was created. Because as we know, olam chesed yibaneh. We know that the world stands on charity, the world stands on us being selfless and giving, and that is an expectation that is had of every Jew. That's the way we're supposed to engage with members of our community, with anyone who we see that may be in need. Every day in Kriya Shema, you will notice that there is a somewhat repetitive phrase that we mention in the first parsha of Kriya Shema, and then once again it's mentioned in the second parsha of Kriya Shema. But there is one marked distinction. So in Vahaya Im Shamoa, which is the second parsha of Kriya Shema, we say that we have an obligation to serve God, ula'avda b'chal levavchem, uvechal nafshechem. Now that sounds familiar because in the first parsha of Kriya Shema, we know that we recite the same basic idea where we say that we are supposed to love HaKadosh Baruch Hu, b'chal levavcha, uvechal nafshecha, uvechal me'odecha. So there are many who have pointed out that there's something missing in the second parsha of Kriya Shema. What happened to b'chal me'odecha? When we talk about Ahavas Hashem, we say we should love Hashem v'chol levavcha v'chol nafshecha v'chol miodecha. A full-blown love and giving of ourselves to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And yet when it comes to the second parsha of Kriya Shema, suddenly we got rid of this idea of v'chol miodecha. And it is well known in the name of the Rishoner, one of the great Hasidic Rebbes, that he said that perhaps the difference is, what are we addressing in each of these parshios of Kriya Shema? When it comes to the parsha of Va'ahavta, we're talking about Ahavas Hashem. My love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to be so extreme that I have to be willing to give everything I have. I have to be willing to give myself, to give my money, to give my heart, to give my soul, to give everything for the Ribono Shel Olam. When it comes to performing mitzvos, which is what is addressed in the Haya im Shamoa, there we have a limit. The Torah does not expect us to give everything for the performance of a mitzvah. There is an extent to which we are obligated to go. I don't have to give b'chol me'odecha, I don't have to give all of my money, because the Gemara says in Maseches Ksubos, ha'mevazveis al yevazveis yoser mechomesh. Even though I like to spend money, even though I may have the money, I don't have an obligation to spend in excess of a fifth of my money in order to perform any mitzvah in the Torah. That is the Gemara Maseches Ksubos on Daf Nun, and the Gemara learns that from a pasuk. So that is the general rule, that we have a limit, there's a cap to how much somebody is obligated to spend for any given mitzvah in the Torah. However, Chazal say in Maseches Sanhedrin, Daf Ayin Dalid Amud Aleph, you can all look it up later, the Gemara is very explicit, that when it comes to the mitzvah of, to the lav of serving Avodah Zarah, so we know many times throughout the Torah it says you're not allowed to serve Avodah Zarah, you're not allowed to have any part in that experience, how much do I have to be willing to give up not to serve Avodah Zarah? So say, for example, somebody threatens me that if I don't serve Avodah Zarah, if I don't participate in some service, then I'm going to lose all of my money. Do I have to be willing to give up all of my money in order to save myself from serving Avodah Zarah? Says the Gemara in Sanhedrin Ayin Dalet, absolutely. There is no cap, there is no limit to how much I must spend in order to save myself from the lav of Avodah Zarah. And the Vilna Gaon quotes in Yeridea, in Shulchan Aruch Yeridea, Simen Kuf Nun Zayin, that's where the Shulchan Aruch talks about all the different aspects of Ovid Avodah Zarah and different things that are pertaining to those laws. The Shulchan Aruch there discusses this, and the Vilna Gaon comments on the bottom of the page in the Bir HaGra that this is limited only to the lav of Avodah Zarah. When it comes to a person serving Avodah Zarah, then I have to be willing to sacrifice all of my money because Avodah Zarah is considered to be min ha'averos ha'chamura Shabbat Torah. But that would not apply to anything else. You may be aware, if you look in the Ramah, in Simen Tuf Resh Nun Vav, the Ramah is in Orach Chaim, so it's in a different section, that Vilna Gaon can be found in Yeridea. But if you look in the Ramah, in Simen Tuf Resh Nun Vav, which is Hilchos Sukkah, Hilchos Lulav, so there, the Ramah gives a very different principle. And the Ramah says, we extend this concept to any lo sase Shabbat Torah. The Gemara there is just giving one example. The Gemara says that if I have a choice, either to serve Avodah Zarah or give up all of my money, I have to be willing to give up all of my money as not to have to serve Avodah Zarah. And the Ramah there extends it and says, when it comes to any lo sase Shabbat Torah, we have the same assumption. Afilu kol hon beso. I would have to be willing to give up all of my money as not to serve Avodah Zarah. In fact, some of the Achronim there comment on the Ramah that I not only have to be willing to give up all of my money in order to save myself from violating a lo sase Shabbat Torah, I even have to be willing to do so as not to violate a shvus midrabanan, which is a chiddush atzum, that's an unbelievable chiddush that we know to be a very troubling one, but yet that is the rule that the Ramah writes very clearly, that for any lo sase Shabbat Torah, I have to be willing to give up all of my money, which leads us to a very, very difficult question. We're not going to get into the discussion of the Pri Megadim and the Chasam Sofer and the Tshuva Me'ava. The Tshuva Me'ava is the Talmud of the Nodi B'Yehuda, and the Chasam Sofer was one of the great, great personalities in Europe in the 1800s, and so many other Achronim have the same question. How do you explain the difference? Why is it when it comes to a mitzvah saseh that I only have to be willing to spend up to a fifth of my money? And when it comes to violating a lo sase, suddenly I'm expected to give up all of my money. What is the difference? They were both given by the same God. So why do we assume that God expects more of me when it comes to a lo sase than he does when it comes to performing a mitzvah sase? That's a very complicated question. And obviously the beyond the purview of the shir, because we just simply don't have enough time. And I look forward, if Reb George will allow, if the Rosh Kolol and the Skan Rosh Kolol, Reb Jonathan, I'll be happy to join you once again on further occasions. But for now, we're going to have to limit our discussion to just this, which leads many Achronim to ask a very troubling question. And this is why it's relevant to our Parsha, and we'll get right back to the point you'll see in a minute. We know that we started with the introduction that the Parsha in Parshas Re'eh gives us to the mitzvah of tzedakah. And it's not just a positive commandment of pasoach tiftach. It's not just that I have to actively give money. But the Torah also gives us an instruction, lo sikbos es yadcha, velo se'ameitz es levavcha, which means that this is framed not only as a mitzvah saseh, but the mitzvah of tzedakah is also framed as a lo saseh. Now, if that is the case, shouldn't we be following the rule of the Ramah? The rule of the Ramah is that in order not to violate a lo saseh Shabbat Torah, I have to be willing to give all of my money. So doesn't that lead us to a major problem? I don't know how many on the phone have given up all of their money to any poor or needy individual that they meet. So we're generous, we give as much as we can, and we're nice and we're charitable and it's lovely. But maybe we're not fulfilling what we're supposed to do. Maybe we're not doing what the expectation is of us. And take it a little bit further. Just to give another example for argument's sake. We know that the Torah has a prohibition, lo samod al dam reyecha. Lo samod al dam reyecha means, very literally, that like the Gemara in Sanhedrin describes, if I see somebody who's drowning in the river, and I say, you know, I'm late to my business meeting, I have somewhere to go, I'm supposed to pick up my children from school, I have to go to the post office, I have to go teach, whatever I'm supposed to be doing, you know what, I don't have time to get involved and be busy with saving somebody who may be drowning, let me just look the other way and move on with life. I don't want to be busy with this. So the Torah says, that's unacceptable. Lo samod al dam reyecha. I'm not allowed to watch and sit by idly while somebody's life is being destroyed, while somebody is dying, while somebody who I can help out is at a big loss and would be helped if only I would step in. Well, if that is the case, we know that hospitals save lives every day. We know that scientific research, maybe it takes years in order to come along with a vaccine or to come along with some kind of research, but as we know, at some point that saves lives. So it may not be initially, but at some point scientific research is going to save a life. Or a hospital that's a local hospital will save the lives of people in my community. So shouldn't I have to give up all of my money for medical research? Shouldn't I have to give up all of my money in order to make sure that our hospitals are well-funded? Because after all, if I don't, and somebody dies as a result of the hospital not being able to properly take care of them, I violate the Avera of Lo Samod Al Dam Reyecha. I'll give you a personal example. A couple of years ago, I actually got a call from a Jew who lives in California. I don't even know where he lives. His name is Rabbi Tzvi Boyarsky. Anyone on the call know who he is? He runs the Aleph Foundation. He's a Lubavitcher Chassid. I had never met him before, but he sent me an email unsolicited, and he runs a foundation that was started, I believe, by the Lubavitcher Rebbe that helps Jews who are in jail. Now, I don't know exactly what he does, what he doesn't do, but he's involved in all kinds of interesting activities with Jews who unfortunately end up in jail, either by fault of their own or whatever it is. They end up in jail and they need services, and somehow he provides them with those services. Every once in a while, Rabbi Boyarsky seems to get involved in things that are not just run-of-the-mill, not just making sure they have matzah, not making sure that they have maror, not just making sure they have a shofar on Rosh Hashanah, but he goes beyond that. And he called me once that there was a Jew who was stuck somewhere in Bolivia. I don't remember if everyone here knows the story. There was a Jew from Flatbush who was stuck in Bolivia, and the Bolivian government apparently had arrested him in a completely illegal fashion, and there was nothing really that he had done that warranted this kind of treatment. I don't know the exact details of the story. It was a number of years ago. Somehow Rabbi Boyarsky got involved, and he called me up, and he said the following. He said that Alan Dershowitz had been involved in looking into the case, and Alan Dershowitz had determined that this person, who was an American citizen who lived in Brooklyn, really has to be brought back home, and his life was in danger. And if he sticks around in this Bolivian jail long enough, he's going to have a very short lifespan. That's what they were projecting. And they asked Rabbi Boyarsky to get involved to figure out how they can help this man get out of the Bolivian jail. Rabbi Boyarsky did months and months of research. In the end, he called me up and he said, listen, I have found out that there's somebody that is very close with your father who is very involved in the Bolivian government. Now, it was unbeknownst to us. We had no idea. But this man apparently had a tremendous amount of real estate in Bolivia, and the Bolivian government rented a lot of the real estate from him. So he obviously had a lot of clout with the Bolivian government. And this Tzvi Boyarsky called me up and he said, I'd like Rav Schechter to please make a call to this individual because maybe he is the only one currently who is able to save this human being from the terrible conditions that he's in Bolivian jail. Okay, So I spoke with my father, and I decided that I was going to call this individual up. I sent him an email. I asked him when we can speak, and he wrote to me that he was on a business trip somewhere. He said, "How can I help you?" So I called him up, and he said, "Well, let me tell you. I'm going to tell you straight." He said, "The Bolivian government is corrupt. If I get involved, I want you to know, I probably will be able to save him, but I want you to know that I'm going to lose 90% of my assets as a result." So you asked Rav Schechter the question, am I obligated to lose 90% of my assets to save a Jew's life, who I don't know, who I maybe will never even meet? Am I mechuyev to do that? Or would you say that because I have so much on the line, and it's risking so much of my parnasa by getting involved, by stepping in and making a phone call, maybe you'll say that I'm not mechuyev to do so? It's a fascinating shaila, and it's nice for us to discuss in theory, but this was actually this man's entire parnasa, his whole life. And the question was whether or not he's mechuyev to do it. I spoke it over with my father. I remember that day I called Rav Asher Weiss as well, and we spoke over the whole issue, and they came to the same conclusion. But the crux of the issue is, it came to this question of Lo Samod Al Dam Reyecha. Here I have an opportunity to save someone's life. If I turn my face away and I just move on with my own life and ignore him, then potentially he's going to lose his life. How much am I mechuyev to spend to save somebody's life? Well, the Gemara says, it seems that I'm mechuyev to spend kol hon beiso. Really? So I have to give up all of my money? Then why don't all of us give up all of our money in order to provide for medical research and in order to provide a hospital being able to care for all patients who may come in subsequently? At the time, my father told me the following chiddush. Rav Asher Weiss thought it was very interesting as well. And they said, the only time we have an obligation to make sure that we give all of our money not to violate a lav is when we're dealing with something that is chad pa'ami. So for example, the Gemara says in Maseches Sanhedrin, when I'm faced with somebody who's threatening that I have to serve Avodah Zarah, I have to be willing to forego all of my money as not to violate the lav of serving Avodah Zarah. The same over here. If I would give all of my money for medical research, I would never have any money left for myself. That's not a one-time activity. That's something that every day of my life, there's never enough money for medical research. There's never enough money for hospitals. I'm not expected to give up my entire life and all of my money on a continuous basis in order not to violate a lav. If it's a one-time expectation that God has of me, then I do it. But if it's something that's beyond that, that is an unrealistic expectation. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu would not expect that of us. That is not what the Ramah meant. And the same goes over here. If I have the mitzvah of tzedakah, and yes, it's true that the Torah frames that as a lo sa'aseh shabbat Torah, however, that does not mean that I have to spend every moment of every day giving every penny I have for the mitzvah of tzedakah. That is unreasonable, because I can give money for the rest of my life, and it still would never fill the void that is expected for all of the tzedakah in the world to be fulfilled. So that is the basic gist of how we get to the mitzvahs lo sa'aseh that is mentioned in our parsha. Now we're going to get to another topic regarding tzedakah, and that is, how much credit am I allowed to take for the charity that I give? So as we know, the practice seems to be all over the world that we put up names of people on buildings and we give them credit for the charity that they give. And this is a troubling custom, because as we know, there are many Ma'amari Chazal which seem to say that this is not really the proper perspective that we should all have. In fact, the Ramah writes in Shulchan Aruch Yaradeya, Simen Reish Mem Tes, Se'if Yud Gimel. The Ramah there is quoting a tshuva from the Rashba. And the story in the Rashba, the original story is, that there was somebody who lived next door to a shul, and he wanted to do some kind of construction. The community didn't want him to. In the end, they made a deal that they would allow him to do the construction, and he took upon himself that he wanted to build an entirely new building for the shul, but he wanted to have the schus for himself, and he wanted his name on the building. He wanted his name plastered all over the campus. And the question was, is that appropriate? So he wants to pay for it, which is very nice, and it's very special. But would he be allowed to take credit for that by putting his name on the building or not? Now today we know this is something we do all the time. But the Rashba was asked this question, and the Rashba goes back and forth, a long tshuva, trying to figure out whether or not this would be an appropriate response for somebody who dedicates a building to the local shul. This is quoted in the Ramah in Shulchan Aruch, where he says, Lo yispar adam b'tzedakah shehu nosein. Do not take credit for the tzedakah that you give. Ve'im mispar, and says the Ramah even further, if you are going to take credit and put your name all over it, lo dai she'eno mekabel schar, not only do you diminish the schar that you get, ela afilu ma'anishim oso aleha. That's a very extreme statement. And it's going to be hard for Rabbi Eliyahu on here. How are you ever going to raise money again? This is a difficult thing for a fundraiser. You're never going to give somebody credit for the money that they give. That's a very hard thing to expect. And yet, that is what the Ramah says in the name of the Tshuvas HaRashba, which is a very troubling comment. I got an email from...
Which Simon in Shofarach is that Ramah?
Reish Mem Tes in Yoredeya. Simon Reish Mem Tes, Se'if Yud Gimel. And there he quotes the original Tshuva in the Rashba. And you can look up the Rashba himself, where he goes through, he deliberates this whole issue back and forth. So this is really based on a Gemara Maseches Ksubas, where the Gemara there says that Nakdivan Ben Gurion, who was known to be one of the wealthiest Jews in Yerushalayim at the time of the Churban Beis Hamikdash, had a daughter. And one fine day, the great tzaddikim of the generation saw Nakdivan Ben Gurion's daughter picking through the garbage, looking for something to eat. And he turns to this woman and he says, how could it be your father was the wealthiest man in Yerushalayim? What happened? How is it possible that your father now has lost everything and now you are subjected to go and pick out food from the garbage? How is that possible? And she says, because everything that my father did, yes, he was a very charitable human being, but everything was lichvoda huda'asa. He did it for himself. So he gave away a lot of money, but in the end he did it for himself. So what does that teach us? That's a very frightening comment. What does that mean? How do we deal with that? In fact, the Magen Avraham, you can look it up as well, Magen Avraham in Or HaChaim, in Hilchos Beis HaKnesses, which is a very appropriate place for this Magen Avraham to be, because there we're talking about building a Beis HaKnesses, the Magen Avraham in Simen Kuf Nun Hei in Or HaChaim writes, in the name of the Sefer Hasidim, Kol Ha'osa Zecher LaDavar, Lo Yihye Lo Zecher. People who are all about themselves and all they want is their names all over the place, they will ultimately not have a Zecher. And then he quotes a story that there was somebody who wanted to build a beautiful Beis HaKnesses. And everybody wanted to contribute. Everybody in the community wanted to be a part of this building campaign. And this man said, I'm only going to give money if I am the sole contributor, if I get all the credit. I don't want anyone's help. I'm a wealthy enough individual, I can pay for the whole building, but I don't want anything but having my name as the credit on the building. Why? Because he said, I want that my grandchildren someday should be able to look at this building and say, look at their grandfather. And I want to have a zecher. I want to be remembered. And he says that Kala Zaro, the Sefer Hasidim, as quoted in the Magen Avraham, writes that his family was wiped out. It's a powerful statement. So how do we deal with that? And what exactly does that mean for all of us? And the answer to that is the Ramah there in the end of Simen Reish Mem Tes. I'm sorry that I scared you until this point. But the Ramah comes to the conclusion that although it would seem that it's an improper thing to do, and this is based on the Gemara in many different places, and it's based on the Tshuva and the Rashba and the Magen Avraham, many different things, but the Ramah says in the end that the Rashba comes to the conclusion that we are allowed to do so. And in fact, he says, Ra'oi la'asos kein. Maybe it's even appropriate to do so. Why would it be allowed for us to do so? So it's really based on a Gemara, I'm sorry, on a Mishnah, Meseches Bikurim. The Mishnah writes, as we know, this is a Gemara that's quoted in Meseches Kiddushin, Daf Lamed Gimel. It's the same Gemara that's quoted in Meseches Chulin, Daf Nun Dalid, where the Gemara quotes a Mishnah in Meseches Bikurim. So it says that when the farmers would come from all over the country, from all over the land of Israel, and they would present their Bikurim in the Beis HaMikdash, there was a lot of fanfare that went along with that procedure. So they would come to Yerushalayim, and the Mishnah gives such a beautiful descriptive detail about all the shopkeepers closing their stores, coming out into the streets, and greeting all of these wonderful farmers who gave up so much to come, and they would send out delegates and representatives in advance of these farmers coming to Yerushalayim, and it was just a beautiful scene. And there was so much happening there. And the Gemara Meseches Kiddushin and Meseches Chulin ask, why did we do that for them? Why was it necessary? The Gemara gives two reasons. One of them is, Kedei shelo tehei machshilan liyasad lavo. As we know, people are human beings. Human beings have feelings. Human beings have thoughts. Human beings need to be treated where they are. And therefore, says the Gemara, we want to encourage people to do this again next year. Do you know what it means for a farmer to give up everything he has, to travel 2 weeks, to go to Yerushalayim, potentially from the furthest place in the country? The Mishnah says it would take somebody 2 weeks to get to Yerushalayim, and then 2 weeks back. So he took off a month of work in order to bring the Bikurim to Yerushalayim. He's going to get there. He's going to be underwhelmed. He won't be too excited. He's never going to come back again. Why is it worth his while? You know what? We're going to have to do something that's going to encourage him to do it again. You know what we're going to do? We know that the Achilles heel of many great people is kavod. And we know that recognition, and we know that people being understood for the challenges that they have goes a long way. And therefore, says the Gemara, we are going to over-exaggerate. We're going to call out all the shopkeepers, all the vendors, all the merchants of Yerushalayim. We're going to send out all the deputies and the mayor and the prime minister. Everyone's going to come out in order to greet these farmers so that they understand how much we value what it is that they do. And this is a concept that the Gemara says we need to sometimes think about. Even though maybe tznius is a very important concept, and even though not taking recognition for something is the gold standard that we're all supposed to live by, but after all, we're all human beings. And therefore, the Gemara says we have to go out of our way to encourage other people and give them tremendous amounts of kavod, because sometimes that's what it takes to help them move along in their process of doing what needs to be done. And therefore, the Mishnah says, by Bikurim we do this, and that is the conclusion of the Ramah as well. Kedei shalot hei machshilan liyasudlavu. We need to do something that is going to encourage them. And the Ramah says, even though we may be uncomfortable with it, even though the Gemara seems to say that it may not be the gold standard of how charity should be given, but yet the Ramah says in the end, the Rashba will agree to this, and the Rashba assumes that this is something that is an acceptable practice, because in the end of the day, we need to encourage people as much as we can to be charitable, to be giving, to be understanding. That is the way we're all supposed to act. That is what we're all supposed to do. So there's an interesting discussion, la halacha, that Rav Moshe has, as well as many other great gedolim. Rav Moshe talks about it in the context of a Hatzalah member who goes on a call on Shabbos, drives somebody to the hospital, and Rav Moshe discusses, is he allowed to drive back after he's finished with all the work that he's done by bringing the patient there? Now, obviously, if there aren't enough Hatzalah members in the community and he's going to have to come back to potentially treat someone else, of course he comes back. That's not the Shaila. The Shaila is that we have enough members and we may not need him for the rest of Shabbos. It seems unlikely that we'll need him. So is he allowed to drive back? And Rav Moshe and Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach get into a whole riveting discussion that revolves around the Gemara Maseches Beitza, Hitir Sofa Mishum Tchilaso. Again, it's a separate topic, but they discuss whether or not he's allowed to come back. Rav Herzog, the chief rabbi of Eretz Yisrael, has a beautiful tshuva where he discusses this in Heichal Yitzchak, and he gets involved in this whole conversation as well. Is a Hatzalah member allowed to return from the hospital after he's done what has to be done for the life-saving activities of the member of his community? And Rav Herzog writes, leaving the whole halachic discussion aside about Hitir Sofa Mishum Tchilasan, do we allow it, do we not? Rav Herzog says, we have to encourage him to want to do this again. This Hatzalah member, look what he just sacrificed. He works hard all week long. He's running around business meetings, doing whatever he has to do. Finally, Friday night, he sits down to the meal with his children, and he's relaxing, and he finally has a chance to sit back and talk to his family and spend time with them. And 3 minutes into the Shabbos meal, he gets a call. He has to go away. And now you're going to tell me he's stuck there for the rest of Shabbos? Do you think next Shabbos, when he gets a call, he's possibly going to go again? Never. He's just going to ignore it. He's going to turn his radio off. Maybe if it's in the end of Shabbos, if it's 5 minutes before the end of Shabbos, an hour before the end of Shabbos, but he's not going to leave in the middle of his meal next week if there's a call, because why would he? He needs some encouragement. And says Rav Herzog, sometimes that human perspective that we know, that giving somebody personal encouragement is so important, that is enough for us to sometimes make sure that the halacha conforms to that as well. And that's what we find here by Tzedakah. That's what we find by many other examples as well. And I see that we're almost out of time. It's already 10:05. Let me just leave you with one final short thought, and that is the following. As we know, we're all in a very, very difficult spot right now. And I don't know exactly what the numbers are in California. I know that in general, what we hear in the news is that things are very dangerous. I know that by us here in New York, we've had a very difficult couple of months. Baruch Hashem, the last 7-8 weeks have been pretty fairly quiet. But before that, we had terrible devastation. And it's a very difficult time for all of us. And we know that we have to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to save us. Every year before Rosh Hashanah, around the time of Yom Noraim, inevitably I get calls from people in our neighborhood who ask that they want to go visit this tzaddik's kever in Europe, and they want to go fly to this great tzaddik to get a bracha, and they want to know what kind of skula they can take upon themselves and what kind of kameya they can wear, and everybody has their ideas of what's going to help them get through the season of Yom Noraim properly. And I've been taught by my teachers that there's no greater skula than what Chazal tell us. And that is, the Gemara says, Kala merachim ala brios, merachamim alav min hashamayim. If you want God's mercy, if you want HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be kind, caring, and sensitive to your needs, then you have to make sure to be commensurate with that kind of behavior in the way you interact with other human beings. Kala merachem al habrios, if you are willing to be compassionate and caring and sensitive to other people and be giving to them, merachamim alav min hashamayim. The Baal Shem Tov famously commented, Hashem tzilcha, that is generally understood to mean God always protects us, and the Ribono Shel Olam always serves as our shade, and He will always look after us. But the Baal Shem Tov said, perhaps it also means, Hashem tzilcha, God is our shadow. The same way when I move my hand, the shadow moves in the exact same proportion as my hand is moving, HaKadosh Baruch Hu acts in the very same way. Hashem tzilcha, if I am a giving person, the Ribono Shel Olam is my shadow. He will be as giving as I am. If I'm a person of understanding, of sensitivity and compassion and caring, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will act in the very same way. So David HaMelech was a great human being, and he goes down for all eternity as a Jew who just lived the amazing life connected to the Ribono Shel Olam, doing everything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted him to do. And David HaMelech had a very difficult life. Although he was a great Jew, he had tremendous struggles that he went through and tremendous obstacles that he had to overcome. David HaMelech at one point asks HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shamra nafshi ki chasid ani. It's a pasuk in Tehillim. God, look after me, save me. Why? Ki chasid ani, because I am a pious individual, because I am a chasid. Now, what does it mean when David HaMelech says he feels the reason why he is worthy of being saved is because he is a chasid? What does it mean to be a chasid? Rav Sham Shir Mifal Hirsch quotes from a Gemara, he proves it from a Gemara, that the definition of chasidus is often misunderstood. Says Rav Hirsch, it certainly does not mean that David HaMelech says, I'm worthy of being saved because I am a Hasidic Jew. Not what he means. So what does it mean? What is the translation of chasid? And Rav Sham Shir Mifal Hirsch writes that a chasid is a person who is a selfless human being. Somebody who lives their entire life for the klal, doing for other people, always being generous and giving and charitable for others. That is the definition of a chassid. That was David HaMelech's entire life. He gave for the klal. He put himself in a position where he was so vulnerable, but he did it for the sake of everybody else, for the sake of the Jewish people, and he enhanced all of their lives as a result. And David HaMelech says, when I'm able to ask for one thing that I feel makes me deserving of being saved, shamra nafshi, it's dangerous out there in the world. I have so many obstacles that I need to overcome. I have so many different people that I've encountered. But the Ribono Shel Olam, I demand of you that you save me. Why? Ki chasid ani. Because I live a life that is a selfless life. Because I live a life giving to other people. When we think about all of the difficulty that we face, when we think about how dangerous our world is currently, in so many different ways, on so many different levels. Obviously, medically it's dangerous. Politically, it seems to be getting more and more dangerous here in America. The rhetoric just seems to continue to get more and more difficult as the days go on. And we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to save us. We ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to have rachmanus, compassion, mercy, caring, and sensitivity for all of us. But the reason why we feel we have a right to ask for that is because Shamra nafshi ki chasid ani. Because I pledge to live a life where I will be a person who is a selfless human being, who is charitable, who is giving, who is there for other people. Lo sikbots es yadcha, lo sa'amets es levavcha. That is the instruction that our parsha gives. Not just that we have to be proactive in giving, but also that we have to be selfless. We have to open up our hearts. We have to open up our minds and always be there to see what it is that we can help provide for other people, what it is that we can do to help sustain other people, and what it is that we can do to help give chizuk and caring and compassion to other people who may so badly need our lending hand and our open heart. So I wish all of you a wonderful Shabbos. I thank you once again for this opportunity to share Divrei Torah with your group in California, and I hope that we will be able to share many more wonderful learning experiences together. And good Shabbos, everybody.